Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Kim Hancher, the Chief Information Officer of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Kim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much.
Now, it's been almost 2 years since you've been on the show, which is unbelievable considering how much things have changed, but it feels like I get to see you a lot in the community, but we haven't got a chance to catch up in more than 2 years. So let's start with some older priorities first and get an update of how things are going. The big one, of course, is bring your own device mobility at EEOC. You guys moved into that BYOD environment roughly 2 years ago. How's it going? Discuss your experiences. Just give us an update.
The bring your own device program in our agency really was born out of necessity. We were going through sequestration in 2012. We had a hiring freeze. We were not able to really sustain the provision of government devices to all the people who needed mobile devices. So bring your own device program, we established it as a pilot, did an alpha beta pilot, invested in a cloud-based mobile device management tool, and then implemented the program. About a fifth of our workforce carries mobile devices, and what we found with Bring Your Own Device is that the people who really preferred to use their own device because they're proficient on the device, they prefer that device, and they find that they're more productive on that device, were immediate adopters of Bring Your Own Device. We had about 20% reduction in the number of people who chose to have a government device issued to them. So about 20% chose to opt out of government-furnished mobile devices. Now, that's already been 3 years. We're in 2015. So what we did last year in 2014 was did a pretty comprehensive survey of our entire mobile device community and asked them, how do you feel about the synchronization of your electronic mail? How do you think we're doing with regard to synchronization of your calendar, your contacts, tasks? Can you find phone numbers, contact information when you need it? Is the synchronization timely? Is it easy to use? That sort of thing. How's the service that we're providing when you do have a problem? And the feedback that we got had some very surprising elements. One of the things that we learned was that providing iPhones to people who have never used an iPhone before, you know, they've always used Blackberries, really requires some training. We had anticipated that they were easy enough to use by themselves and the people would get it. But what we heard from the feedback very clearly was that there needed to be more orientation and instruction on how to use the device for work. So overall, from a mobility perspective, one of the findings is that the government workforce really does need training and how to be proficient in using a government-furnished device.
You'd think that with people in their personal lives having smartphones at such an increasingly high rate that whether it's Android or a iPhone, an Apple device, it would be almost second nature to them to jump in. But you do have people who only have a BlackBerry, and I think that's probably the difference you're seeing is that they've quote-unquote grew up with only a BlackBerry, and the Apple is a much different device. How'd you deal with the training issue?
Well, that's what we're working on right now is sort of a corrective action plan, and I've got a couple strategies. One is to offer a 30-minute one-on-one training when anyone wants it. So we have a system that we use for requests and for problem reporting. So we've essentially offered anybody that carries mobile device, uses it for work, to have 30-minute one-on-one where we have a technician who is familiar with that particular device, iOS or BlackBerry or Android, to help them learn about the different functions and how to be proficient. Second thing is we're starting to organize the community of mobile device users so that they can offer each other help. I found that some of my best tips and tricks to use my mobile device have come from other people who are users like myself. And they've just found something that they think is either an app that is just so terrific or a particular way that the device works. And so we're encouraging sharing of knowledge across the mobile device community.
Is there things you're doing this year to say, okay, how do we move more people to BYOD? Or knowing that, you know, you maybe will never hit 80 or 90% BYOD, but you could hit 30 to 40%, which again, I think would go back to more cost savings.
Honestly, I have learned that with this workforce, that government-provided devices will always be preferred, except for a small proportion, because they're, you know, frankly, we don't offer a reimbursement of costs for business use of a personal device. I think if we had that incentive, we would see a flip of the numbers. And that's been one of the hardest hurdles to get over in terms of bring your own device programs. Specifically, what the problem is, how do you, as a federal agency, reimburse the employee for the actual business use of that personal device? How do you calculate that? What data do you base that on? Those are the questions that are very difficult to answer, and we just haven't quite found the right tools that will allow a person to have two personas on the device. Sort of a button that you push when you're doing business and a button that you push when you switch over to personal use. Then we would have some data upon which to reimburse the individual. But the government rules right now are kind of clear that you can't just give a flat rate reimbursement. It has to be based on actual business use.
That's interesting because I was going to ask that question about just doing a flat rate. I mean, if someone said, how much is your bill? My bill is $100 a month. We'll give you $50. I think a lot of people would say, okay, that's worthwhile to me because I probably do use this half the time. But this idea, I think, as you said, there's no way to measure it is correct because people, there's not a separation between business and personal. I'm sending an email to you as for business. Oh, now I got to send an email to my doctor for something else or my wife or my husband or my child for this, you know, event that's coming up this weekend. And you, there's no button to go back and forth. The flat rate seems to be the answer. I think a lot of companies potentially do a flat rate.
They do.
Is it regulations of EEOC? Is it regulations of government? What
right.
stops the flat rate?
To tell you the truth, my information is based on a GAO decision that was rendered in the age of just cell phones on cell phone reimbursement. And it was really clear that the agency could certainly reimburse for business use of the personal cell phone, but that they can't do a flat rate. So that's really there's very limited case law, so to speak, or precedent, but that's the one that is sitting out there right now. And I think there are probably cases where the employee, I'm going to take the census, the upcoming 2020 census as an example. If you hire, let's say, a temporary workforce to work for 5 hours a day and to use the, and having their own device is a requirement, you know that during a certain percentage of the month that that individual is working and it is for business use. That might be a good step towards reimbursement. I think that that might pass muster.
That's interesting. It sounds like something maybe we should look into and maybe shine some light on. Kim, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have a few more things to hit upon around BYOD. My guest today is Kim Hanscher, the Chief Information Officer of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Kim Hanscher, the Chief Information Officer of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Now, Kim, before break, we were talking about BYOD and the mobile computing environment and the move that EEOC really took several years ago now to really implement BYOD. One reason why you guys did it was the budget challenges of 2012 and 2011 and leading into 2013. And those savings you got were important to put toward mission in other areas. Now here we are a couple years later. Are you still seeing some of those savings? Do you still, the budget pressures have been relieved to some extent, but how does BYOD play into that broader picture?
The savings that we made were I mean, I would call it cost cutting. We really cut our mobile program cost. And we did it partly through BYOD, so reducing the number of people who get a government-furnished device. We also did it by eliminating zero-use government-provided devices, you know, really culling and only providing it to people who are actually going to use it, because otherwise you pay those monthly voice and data service costs. And then the other thing we did is we, you know, got better voice and data prices. The GSA negotiated this federal strategic sourcing initiative for voice and data services. And I'm talking about wireless voice and data services. And we really competed that, gave everybody fair opportunity, valuation, and drove down the costs. So that was another really important factor. Before 2012, so I've been here since 2008, we had been spending up to $800,000 a year for our mobile device program, and we dropped the overall cost after implementation of those initiatives. In 2012, we cut it by roughly 50%, so it was down to $400,000. And then we've sustained it from 2013, 2014 to about $200,000. So we're talking about a really big reduction, and we do intend to sustain it at that level.
That's incredible. I mean, I think other agencies will hear this and say, yeah, but EEOC is small. You only have a few thousand employees. But I think the broader point is that you looked at your devices, you renegotiated rates, and you got rid of the ones that aren't working. Very simple stuff in many regards, and that means real savings. Now, are you able to use that money, whether it's in IT or put it towards mission? Are you able to see those reinvestments?
Yeah, you bet. As a matter of fact, that's the only way that we can invest in improving our citizen services, as well as our efficiency, just government-to-government data exchange. As a matter of fact, we use some of these savings to begin a program that we call FedSEP. It stands for the Federal Sector EEO Portal. Every federal agency has a equal employment opportunity responsibility. And the staff at that agency deal with the investigations into discrimination allegations. They do all of the decision making. And if a decision that's made at the agency level is appealed by the complainant, then the complainant can request a hearing with the EEOC. And when we begin that work to hold a hearing and take a second look at the decision, we need all of the information from that complaint. And that has been transferred to the agency in paper. We made efforts in 2008 to 2010 to move it to CD. And now FedSEP actually gives a portal so that the information can be electronically transferred from the agency to the EEOC for use in hearings.
It feels like, you know, welcome to the 21st century, right? You're no longer worried about paper and now everything's electronic. So when was this launched? And give me a sense of how's it going, the biggest benefits?
About 325 federal entities. And all of them are responsible for the transfer of information to our agency. Specifically, what FedSEP does is it allows data, aggregate data, about the complaints that are lodged in that agency. And it's a statutory requirement that agencies report to the EEOC on an annual basis, aggregate data about their complaints. We call that the Form 462. That's the old name for it. And the other annual reporting requirement that federal agencies have is on the demographics of their workforce. So how many whites, blacks, Asians, men, women in the engineering community or in the IT community or in the legal staff, all different kinds of, in the SES, that's a big topic right now, is diversity in the SES community. So this data is very important for us, for the federal government overall, to serve as a model for diversity and a model workforce in our country. So FEDSEP has really helped in streamlining that data collection as well as the analysis of that data and getting it out and in machine-readable form for the academics and for others that are interested in that data.
And interestingly, beforehand, was it a data warehouse that held this, but it was much harder to access? Does FEDSEP put things, quote-unquote, online, meaning so academics can access it in specific ways?
I'll be honest with you. The data never existed in digital format before. It was really paper. And so it is a new database. The availability of the data right now is mostly targeted towards our analytics staff, and we're using a cloud-based tool, a Bird on Demand, for analysis. And then we publish the data on an annual basis, and there's lots and lots of interest in those data sets.
Wow, very exciting. I mean, that just probably makes people's lives a lot easier. It makes data more accessible. How does this relate back to the open government push from the Obama administration and how EEOC is kind of trying to meet those goals?
This is absolutely one of our important open government initiatives. We have been sort of thinking about it, conceiving it, trying to work out how the portal would be easiest to use for those 325 client agencies, so to speak. One of the things that we found is that allowing them to update their own information in the portal allows us to have much more accuracy and reduces the administrative burden on our staff because we can count on it being updated sort of as people rotate in or rotate out of any one of those 300 agencies.
I want to just jump into one last priority of that we talked about previously in our last time you were on the show a couple years ago was the IT workforce. And the fact is that this has been a big focus area for you and ensuring that they have the necessary skill set. And this kind of tags back to something with FEDSEP around continuous improvement, whether you call it Agile or DevOps, whatever you want to call it. Talk about the IT workforce a little bit, and how are you ensuring that they are able to have these right skill sets?
Like many federal IT organizations, the EEOC has a what I call a blended workforce. It is part federal employees and part contract service personnel. So our IT workforce has been blended ever since I came to the agency, and it will probably always be a blended workforce. We have roughly 51 people that are government employees, and we have roughly 25 on-premise contractors and a few off-site. So the IT workforce, when I first came in 2008, was really lacking in project management competencies. And coming from project management background myself, I really wanted to model the kinds of, you know, disciplines that I wanted to see. So I worked with the staff myself in training on basic project management principles and also in making clear expectations about starting projects, about reporting progress, and about closing out projects. Then we were able to hire in 2010, and we brought in five experienced project managers. So I think that was a big boost in that particular area. And also in 2010, we began, call it professionalizing the IT workforce. So we emphasized ITIL principles and hosted on-site ITIL training and then the certification exam for foundations, ITIL fundamentals here on site. And I actually participated in that. So I had the same pressure of taking a test after 3 days of training to see whether or not you passed, as did my colleagues. And slowly but surely, we've attained close to 30% of certification in ITIL for the IT workforce. We've also done some training in agile processes. We've got one government manager who's a scrum master, and we have a number of people who've been through agile project management training and agile development processes. And we're really working on applying some of the concepts from agile in our environment. So those are some of the key initiatives that we've worked on over the last couple years.
Very interesting, both the ITIL piece and the Agile piece. Both themes I'm hearing from other CIOs around government, specifically the Agile piece. So be careful, those other CIOs may try to steal your people.
That's right.
In a good way, right?
That's right.
Well, let's take a quick break, Kim, and we'll come back. We'll jump into some newer priorities. My guest today is Kim Hancher, the CIO of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Kim Hancher, the Chief Information Officer of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Kim, before break, we were talking a lot about your former priorities, stuff that we talked about back in 2012 when you were last on the show. Let's move on to some new priorities. And the first one I got to start with is financial management, and specifically the move to a new financial management system that the EEOC is in the middle of. You guys are moving to the Interior Department's Interior Business Center. Give me a sense of what's going on from your perspective, the CIO's perspective, with that move and the timeline.
With any move, there's good and bad. On the positive side, we are staying with Oracle Federal Financials, so the learning curve should not be terribly difficult. But on the negative side, it is a different interface. The federal cloud system that we used prior had a different user interface. It was a proprietary interface. And so there will be some change and some relearning and retooling on the part of our user community. We probably have about 100 to 200 end users of the financial system, and it includes both our general ledger system as well as our procurement system. The Interior Business Center has always been a good partner to the EEOC. We use the Federal Personnel Payroll System, FPPS, one of their shared services, and we also use QuickTime, another one of the Interior Business Center's services. So we are very familiar with their customer support and with their project management capabilities. The cutover from the federal cloud system to the Interior Business Center was February of this year, and it went really pretty smoothly. The cutover was completed on time. The system remained up and available to us. Our biggest challenge right now is really just learning the intricacies of both the procurement system, which is a new module for us, and the interface for the federal financials in terms of end user procurement requests, issuing obligations, and then processing, receiving reports so that our vendors get paid.
Let's move to some other new priorities. Cloud, can't get through a conversation with a CIO without talking about cloud. You guys actually, you talked about cloud earlier with some of the other priorities, your MDM system for BYOD. Let's talk about other applications and uses of the cloud at the EEOC.
Shortly after the federal CIO issued the guidance on cloud first, the EEOC created a policy on cloud first. And the policy is very simple. It says that unless there is financial time or requirement constraint that will not permit us to use cloud services, we should always consider cloud services first. So we also put together an implementation plan that said over the next couple years, we're going to implement software as a service and look for cloud-based software as a service plans or programs when we have new needs. And then we'll reevaluate the need for cloud-based services. So really, over the past couple of years, we have had a lot of really interesting and I think successful implementations. We have our information technology service management tools in the cloud. Like most agencies, we used an on-premise remedy solution. And a couple years ago, we retired that system. And instead, we really re-engineered our IT processes and designed those processes using a tool called ServiceNow. ServiceNow is an IT service management component that has lots of modules. The ones we first focused on were incident management, problem management, knowledge management, and service catalog. So those are now a year and a half mature, and we're starting efforts to bring up asset management and change management using that ServiceNow tool.
And when you talk about these tools, they are what? When you say IT services, so what is incident management? It sounds cybersecurity, or what is knowledge management? Just give me a quick idea.
Our mission, IT group, is to provide the infrastructure and access to all the electronic systems that EOC users need. And when there are problems or incidents, you got to have a ticketing system whereby people can report it. You can then assign it to technicians to do triage and resolve the problem. So we call those incidents when there are known fixes, workarounds. Sometimes you have a number of incidents that you don't have fixes or workarounds for, and those we aggregate into what's called a problem, and that may take an interdisciplinary team to actually engineer a solution. So those are the ITIL definitions, so to speak, for incident management and problem management.
Very interesting, because when you hear about incident management, you think of cyber. When you think of asset management, or you think of cyber in some ways too. And I know we'll get to cyber later in the conversation. Other areas of cloud, email, are you there yet? Collaboration, are you there yet? What about some of the infrastructure as a service, platform as a service that we keep hearing a lot about?
The biggest cloud effort that we've done so far has been the migration of our mission systems from on-premise to a managed cloud services provider. And we have been planning that for about 6 months. We have, a lot of invested in those systems. They are used by about 2,000 EEOC employees and about 1,000 state and local government entities. So it would be like the Montgomery County Office of Civil Rights, or the Commonwealth of Virginia Office of Human Rights. So those are all of our user base. They span federal, state, and local. The Integrated Mission System, IMS, that's the name of our mission system, has now moved from this building in Northeast D.C., which actually lost power for a good part of yesterday due to that power surge. And it's those kinds of incidents, honestly, that spurred our efforts to move these systems out of the city and into a real data center, which has power generators for backup. They have 24/7 security, and they have a facility that is less likely to be disrupted by some of the things that happen in a normal office environment.
Now, has that happened, or is it happening now?
It was completed in February, And we went through kind of a weekend migration where we turned down the systems at 7 p.m. Eastern Time because we have offices on the West Coast. And then all through Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. And it was not just our integrated mission system, but also our document management system and our business intelligence reporting system. So three major systems were moved, not physically moved, but were brought up in the cloud and made available to that user community that I discussed earlier on Monday morning.
Very cool. Obviously, it's working. No problems. Here we are a few months later, and you're happy with that change.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. It's working. There were problems, and we worked through those. In the first day and a half, we had some rough times, but we found, you know, we found the root cause, and it had to do with load balancing. And so one of the lessons learned is to program in, you know, a little bit more thorough load testing before, you know, you actually bring on your big user community, because it's a transaction-based system, and that it's just so difficult to simulate that kind of load before the real thing happens.
Yeah, I think that's a common challenge when people change systems, that they don't realize how many users they actually have, and then they do, that takes the system down, and people get frustrated, you know, the routine, but it sounds like you guys have figured it out. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some other priorities. My guest today is Kim Hancher, the Chief Information Officer of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Kim Hancher, the Chief Information Officer of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Kim, we're talking a lot about your current set of priorities. Last part of the show, cloud computing is a major one. One other one that you have to talk to every CIO about is cybersecurity. It's a constant challenge, and the threats are increasing. Talk about how EEOC is dealing with their cyber challenges. And, of course, if you can talk a little bit about your implementation of the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, the CDM program that DHS is running, how does that fit into your plans?
With regard to cyber challenges, I tell you, this year has distinguished itself as one of the most challenging in my CIO career. Like many agencies, we have had exploits of malware and viruses, and a recognition that it's close to impossible to keep out the bad guys. The important thing is to continue to improve threat protection. And even more importantly, this year, what I've learned is how to contain threat once they're here and discovered. So my CIO role, I would say, has changed dramatically in that I no longer totally delegate IT security to the chief IT security officer and our information security officers. Indeed, a good part of my day, I would say at least an hour a day, is spent on IT security because it needs my attention. I need to understand where the vulnerabilities are and what our corrective actions are. I need to give guidance in some cases about these kinds of issues.
Kim, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I definitely want to go on a more personal note. You mentioned over your career, you've never seen cyber so challenging. Let's talk about your career on a more personal note. I understand that you may be leaving government, and talk a little bit about that decision to retire and what comes next.
It's so hard to even imagine being retired. I have such long days, and they are so intense and like intellectually challenging that it's hard to believe that I might be considering retiring, but I am. My husband is also retiring. He's a Department of Veteran Affairs architect, and we both are pretty much on the same timeline. So sometime this year, probably this spring, summer, I'll announce a date, and the agency will be recruiting a new CIO. And, you know, that's an exciting opportunity to bring in some new blood. And I will, you know, be happy to do sort of orderly transition of knowledge management to whoever that new CIO might be. I haven't really thought too much about what I might do after federal service, but I can tell you this, I'll be quite busy over the summer because my daughter's getting married.
Well, congratulations there, and congratulations on that decision. It's always a big one. When you look back across your career, you worked in government for how many years? And I know you've mentioned that you were at the EEOC since 2008. Where else have you worked in government?
You know, I started my federal career as a temporary worker. I was all of 21 years old. Department of Education was doing a study, a two-year study, and I signed on as a analyst, policy analyst. It was during that time that I started using the computer for my analysis, and I really liked programming, and I liked dealing with computers. And then it took me, after that temporary job, I got a job offer from the Department of Veteran Affairs and started working with the VA in 1983. And believe it or not, that was before the days of email. Imagine.
You sound like believe it or not. I mean,
I know.
1983.
It's just hard to imagine an organization, let alone the whole government, without email.
Did you even have your own phone on your desk? I mean, I've heard stories from people in the 70s that there was, you know, the one phone in the office and you had to get permission to use it.
Yes, those were the days of word processors that were kind of really like typewriters, but they had this tiny little screen. And it was also the days of these big floppy disks. I think they were 5-inch floppy disks. So I made my splash, so to speak, in the technical world, implementing the very first email system for the Department of Veteran Affairs, the largest civilian agency of that time. And we really brought dramatic change in that agency. It had operated as essentially different departments, the Veterans Benefits Department, Health Administration, and cemeteries. And the email system really helped to blend the organization and to provide a channel of communications across hundreds of thousands of workers that had never existed before. So that was, I would say, one of the key contributions during my 15 years at the VA. I also worked at the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, and I started working there in 1998, and it was right before the year 2000, so that was one of the things that we focused on. But I was really hired for my work in electronic government. Back in those days, it was called electronic commerce. It was before e-gov was even a word. But what I did there was work primarily on government-to-business, electronic, online, web-based, first-generation web-based systems that eliminated paper transactions during what became a boom in the telecom industry. It was a time of convergence when cable networks were starting to be developed and installed. It was a time when wireless communications just started and when the whole idea of a PDAs, productivity devices, personal
digital assistants. Yes.
Yes, digital assistants.
It's so easy to forget what those PDAs were, but they were you know, the initial Palm Pilot, if you remember that. Those are great things
back
in the early 2000s.
You bet. And so working at the FCC was very, very rewarding. I was there for 10 years. And when I came to the EEOC as the CIO, I really felt like I'd achieved my career goal because I always wanted to be the boss. You know, the boss of IT. And it's an area that, you know, I just love. I find technology to be, you know, constantly challenging. And the role of government IT executive is one that I hold dear. I'm vice president of GITEC, Government IT Executive Council. And that also has been really enjoyable in terms of giving back and sharing knowledge. GITEC has a big conference coming up at the end of April. It starts April 26th through 28th. And if anyone is interested in GITEC, please join us. Go to gitec.org/summit and register.
All right, and we will definitely link to their site on federalnewsradio.com, as our morning show anchor Tom Temin is the master of ceremonies for the entire conference, so I know he's very excited about that.
He is, and he's just a great MC and has helped us so much in making this a really premier event among senior executives.
All right, Kim, well, congratulations on your decision to retire. This is exciting news and keeping up with the next chapter of your life. I know you will stay involved in the federal community somehow, so we will look forward to seeing you, so to speak, on the other side. Unfortunately for us, we are out of time for today. My guest today has been the soon-to-be-retired Kim Hancher, the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission's Chief Information Officer. Kim, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
It's been my pleasure, Jason.
I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.